And so out my 20s and early 30s, I think that there was a lot more focus that I tried to give on romantic relationships. And the more that I learned about non-monogamy, the more that I embraced it and read the books and discovered the concept of relationship anarchy, it's like I kind of went full circle back to who I was in my teens and early 20s and said, no, actually, this is who I want to be. These are the kinds of relationships that I want to focus on. And it's just, you know, my romantic partnerships are still very fulfilling. They're still really important in my life. But it's really allowed me to better embrace what I want out of these other friendships.
Welcome to Normalizing Non-Monogamy, the podcast where we interview incredible people from all over the world to hear their personal journeys of self-discovery through the lenses of love, sex, and relationships.
Our mission is to show people that they're not alone and to inspire them to embrace their true selves so that together we can open minds and live authentically without shame.
We believe everyone's story is powerful and beautiful, yet it's important to remember that everyone does life a little bit differently and that the views and opinions expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect our own.
Additionally, we aren't doctors. Please consult a medical professional for anything regarding your health that you might learn about on the show. Enjoy!
Welcome to episode 340. We're Finn and Emma, and today we have an amazing conversation with Jessica. Jessica's been exploring non-monogamy for over a decade, mostly in the form of relationship anarchy.
Yeah, this is an amazing conversation, and Jessica takes us back to a very young age where she was pretty intentional about not following the societal scripts and norms for relationships, really focusing on her friendships, her family, and building an amazing community. And that has sort of ebbed and flowed over the years, but carried through in many ways until today. And so this is just a fantastic conversation about how she's gotten here, what relationship anarchy looks like for her, and how much of a focus community plays in her life. So
we cover a lot of ground.
We do, and this is amazing. So thank you, Jessica, for coming on, for sharing your story, and for all of the work you do.
Yes, Jessica is also one of the founders of Evergreen Hearts, which is a nonprofit that creates resources, connection, and education opportunities for people exploring alternative relationships in the Seattle and Puget Sound area. Links to all of the work for Evergreen Hearts are in the show notes.
Yeah, she'll talk a little bit more about what that looks like. But yeah, as Emma said, links are in the show notes. Definitely check it out. Amazing organization and super excited about what they're building up there.
Yes. And with that, anyone who's a premium subscriber will jump into the interview now. And for anyone else, we're going to go through a couple of announcements.
We're going to do them lickety split today.
Super fast.
All right.
Go for it.
First one, I'm going to slow way down. is our premium subscription. If you don't want to listen to us ramble at you for the first few minutes of every episode, you can pay to be a member of our premium subscription for as little as $4 a month. You get to skip these announcements up front, and we'll still give you all of the important dates for different events and different things coming up in the outro. To learn more and sign up, go to our website, normalizingnonmonogamy.com. Just scroll all the way down on the homepage. It's down there. You'll figure it out. We believe in you.
Next up, as summertime approaches, you may be out there wishing you had more community, more like-minded friends. So we would really encourage you to go check out our virtual community by going to the community tab of our website, normalizingnonmonogamy.com. There you can read all about it and you can join for only $5 a month. When you join, you'll be surrounded by so many amazing people supporting each other every single day. We have a virtual platform that we use that is amazing. And we also do multiple community calls online per month. So we would love, love, love for you to check it out. Find your people, find your community, and it's only $5 a month.
One quick correction.
Oh yeah? What did I miss?
You didn't miss anything other than this is also applicable if you live in the Southern Hemisphere and it's almost winter.
Oh, that's true.
So you might be approaching winter and looking for friends and community.
I should clarify. It's only summer in the Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah.
And not quite. Summer is approaching. It's still May.
And the links are the same regardless of your hemisphere, as is the cost, as is the phone app.
Yes. It's all the same. So go and check it out. Sign up now.
We are hemisphere independent. Agnostic.
So anywhere in the world. You can be anywhere in the world and join.
That's right.
Actually, it could be in outer space too.
I suppose it is an intergalactic community at this point. All right. The last thing we wanted to tell.
Having fun.
The last thing that we wanted to tell you all about, besides our intergalactic community.
Yes.
is our favorite way to get tested for STIs. That is stdcheck.com. You hear us talk about this all the time. That is because it's the service Emma and I absolutely love. It's the service we use, and it is a service we recommend to pretty much anybody who asks us if we have recommendations. It is really, really simple to use. You sign up online. You use the links on our website. We'll talk about that in just a second. But you sign up online. You make an account. They basically fax your information to one of the many thousands of national laboratories that they partner with. You show up, you give them a little bit of blood and whatever else they ask for. And then in like 2 days, you've got your results on your phone, ready to go, ready to have a great time, ready to have that great summer.
Yes.
Or winter.
Yes.
That you are looking for. An amazing service Emma and I use. We love it. If you would like to save $10, use the links in the podcast player show notes or on our website at normalizingnonmonogamy.com under the resources tab. You'll save $10 and you help support the show financially. This brings the cost of a 10-panel test down to just $129. Okay.
I think that's it.
You think that's it? We should just remind people to reach out to us. You do it. You do.
No, I'll do it. You said it was it. I was going to say that's it for stdcheck.com. Again, quick plug, go check it out. But we would also like to remind you to reach out to us, send us a voicemail, send us an email. We would love to hear from you. And if you'd like to come on the podcast, be a guest, or if you have any questions or comments for us, please reach out to us. And now I think that's officially it. We're ready to go talk with Jessica.
Let's do it.
Welcome, Jessica, to the podcast today. We're really excited to dive in, get to know you better, and to have you here today. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
We would love for you to start just by introducing yourself.
Okay. Well, my name is Jessica. I am based in the Seattle area, and I have been non-monogamous for, 11 years now, intentionally. I have a nesting partner. I identify as a relationship anarchist, and I have several other close relationships that I joke that are probably considered part of my polycule at this point.
Yeah, that's amazing. I'm curious, just to start here, like what is the polycule relationship dynamic look like today? And then we're going to get in a time machine, and assuming we didn't start at relationship anarchy with a big polycule, how did we get here?
Yeah, so like I said, I have a nesting partner, and we have been in each other's lives for over 10 years now. My polycule, you know, as a relationship anarchist, of somebody who values relationships very differently, I have two very close friends. They are not romantic relationships, but, you know, in that relationship anarchy smorgasbord, they fill a lot of it. And, you know, I frequently refer to them as my polycule. And then I have one new romantic entanglement that isn't, you know, quite as engraved as the rest of them, but starting to, you know, become more of a ongoing thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I'm excited to dig into the sort of the way that you do balance out the different types of relationships to meet the different sort of needs and wants that you have. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But let's first go back in time a little bit. When did non-monogamy or different relationship styles kind of enter your life?
Well, I would say that intentionally it was a conversation that happened after, you know, some less intentional non-monogamy type things. You know, I've had relationships in the past where we explored things like threesomes and, you know, just opening up to some extent. When I was much younger, you know, middle school, high school, I made the decision that I was not really interested in going down the path of, you know, the traditional lifestyle, go get married and have kids in a house in the suburbs. And I articulated as such to my mother, my family, and I didn't get any pushback. I was encouraged that I could go live my life however I wanted to. And I did. So even when I was, quote unquote, monogamously dating, those were usually very short-term relationships because I was not interested in going down the path of long-term or marriage. And so a lot of the really close relationships that I had that were, you know, when I would imagine what is 50 years old look like for me, it was my friendships and my relationships with my siblings or my cousins. And those were the ones that I foresaw as these are going to be those really significant lifelong relationships. And so it wasn't until I, you know, had a partner that we were both very on board with the concept of non-monogamy, that we decided to do that in more of a romantic capacity. And so it was an agreement from the beginning of our partnership that we were going to be non-monogamous. We didn't really know all of the words for it at that point. But those friendships that I had and the way that I managed those other relationships kind of just stood like that since then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's amazing. I'm curious, back in like the middle school, high school world of dating. I mean, let's be honest, like that's not a great time for most of us to be navigating the world of dating. But I'm curious how it went for you communicating, or did you communicate this sort of desire to other people that like, hey, yeah, I'm maybe interested in dating, but I'm not looking for the like move into the suburbs with the white picket fence. I'm curious how those conversations went for you.
I actually just didn't date. I did not start dating until college. And even then, it wasn't any sort of significant dating. It was very short term, kind of dipping my toe in the water sort of experiences that I think people usually had in high school. But I'm a very romantic person. I enjoy having sex. So I don't consider myself aromantic or asexual. But when I was younger and I thought about what do I want relationships to look like, and the standard for most people was very involved, I knew that I didn't want that. So I just went to the other end of the spectrum of, I'm just not going to have romantic relationships. And I had really fulfilling friendships that I focused on.
That's amazing. I love that the theme keeps coming back up, even just in the first couple minutes here, of like the type of relationship almost seems irrelevant in some ways. It's, if I can get a need met, and it's a friend or a family member or something, like that's really sounds like the driving factor for you versus I need a thing that looks like this thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like I am starting to see that a lot more with my friends who don't identify as non-monogamous. I'm in my mid-30s and I have friends who are married, usually the friends that are married without children. I have friends that are single. And trying to figure out, you know, do they want to go find that person to settle down with right now, or are they ready for that? And I'm seeing amongst my friends that don't even, you know, practice non-monogamy, have never been in that sort of lifestyle, that they're also starting to focus a lot more on their friendships as the really sustainable thing that, you know, when you think about who do I want to go on vacation with, or who do I want to live with, who do I want to focus my time and, you know, come to at the end of the day to talk about a rough day at work. It's a lot of those really close friendships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that. I love that how you kind of just started forming those from an early age as well. And I'm curious, so how did it go, like moving into that in your 20s and figuring out what type of relationship, like romantic relationships and other relationships worked for you in that phase of your life?
You know, it's interesting because when I partnered up and we decided to explore non-monogamy together, I actually shifted gears and focused a lot more on that partnership, which just seems counterintuitive. It's like I had it figured out before of what I wanted. And then I was like, okay, but now I'm going to focus on this partnership and trying to date and trying to figure out what that looks like for me. And it didn't diminish the friendships that I had, but you know, it definitely changed the way I tried to form relationships with other people. And so out my 20s and early 30s, I think that there was a lot more focus that I tried to give on romantic relationships. And the more that I learned about non-monogamy, the more that I embraced it and read the books and discovered the concept of relationship anarchy, it's like I kind of went full circle back to who I was in my teens and early 20s and said, no, actually, this is who I want to be. These are the kinds of relationships that I want to focus on. And it's just, you know, my romantic partnerships are still very fulfilling. They're still really important in my life, but it's really allowed me to better embrace what I want out of these other friendships.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Like I do. It is amusing, I think, like that you decided to try to go down that road of more focus on the romantic relationships and then kind of backed up and was like, well, actually, I don't really want to do that. But you had to live through it to figure that out.
And I think non-monogamy as a concept is fantastic because it breaks down the systems that we think are in place. If you have to go find, you know, that one person that's your soulmate and your best friend and just checks all of the boxes for you, it breaks down and says, no, you can find multiple people who do that. But I think where a lot of people go with non-monogamy is they say, well, now I'm going to go find two or three romantic relationships that are also my best friend and also are the people that I, you know, split up my travel with and everything. And so when I actually saw the relationship anarchy smorgasbord for the first time, it was like everything just made sense in my brain again. I was like, yes, this is what it's supposed to be. These are the, you know, these are all of the different boxes, and not one person or two people or three people have to check all of the boxes. I can spread them out as it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's amazing. That idea that, right, it's almost like there sometimes feels that pressure to go around and collect a whole bunch of the ones, right? I've got this soulmate, and I want to do, you know, I want to go on long trips with them, and I want to go on long trips with them, and I want to do romantic dinners with them, and them, and that. And like at the end of the day, like, well, geez, I only have so much time. Like, I can't be soulmates with seven people because everyone's going to get such a small fragment, right, of that. And so breaking it up and saying, yeah, they don't all have to look the same is, I think, a really powerful shift to make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So I've actually started sending the relationship anarchy smorgasbord over to my friends that are not non-monogamous. And now a few of them are starting to consider that relationship anarchy might be the better way to go. And sometimes I'm not a fan of the name, that anarchy just sounds like such an extreme thing. And it's so, to me, it just feels so soft and comfortable.
Yeah. I'm curious, back when you were first, it sounds like, and maybe I'm kind of missed this, but I'm curious if this is sort of what happened was when you dove into the romantic partnership and were like, we're going to explore non-monogamy, did some element of pressure show up to say, well, if I'm going to be romantic and I'm going to be non-monogamous, that must mean multiple romances have to show up. At least in those early days, like, it sounded like you were like, oh, I must be dating multiple people in order to be non-monogamous, versus where you're at today, which is, in order to be non-monogamous, I just am defining relationships as they come in sort of an anarchistic way.
I think that it's interesting because there was maybe some new pressure while other pressures were released in finding a person that I could, you know, go do life with. I think that that's so important too. It's just, you know, even if it's more than one person, having somebody that you're really confident that, like, we can do life together. And this is a person that's always going to have my best interests in mind. And we can be that constant source of support. There was a lot of pressure that was kind of released in doing that in a non-monogamous capacity that I didn't, like, the door's open now. I have this person. I'm comfortable. I'm confident in this partnership. But, you know, it doesn't have to be the one romantic partner for the rest of my life. If I, you know, get drawn in a different direction, then that's okay. We can talk through it. And that's definitely on the table. But you're kind of right. Like, there were some new pressures that once you start identifying as non-monogamy, there's some very specific non-monogamy communities. And, you know, that's a big part of my life now too, is just the community organizing. And, you know, in those early days, especially when we didn't really know how to define what we were doing, we didn't know what books to read. When we first got plugged into a community, it was, you know, a lot of people that dated a lot of other people. They had, you know, sex parties that we were, you know, invited to. They had a lot of conversations with us about their exploits, the people that were dating. And I think there is some aspect of, like, trying to keep up with the Joneses, of trying to say, like, well, yes, I am non-monogamous too. And so therefore I'm trying to check some of those boxes. And so I think that there were more attempts in those early days of, like, trying to, you know, shove a square peg in a round hole of, I'm going to try to go on dates. And it, you know, it didn't last too long. You know, we had conversations about what was right for us and, you know, kept shifting gears and changing as it felt right. But that initial, like, trying to fit in was a little bit tricky.
Yeah. And I'm curious, kind of, like, how long had you and your partner been together at that point?
So when we partnered up, we were actually friends before. We had dated briefly before. So we had a really, like, you know, we had some good history together of knowing each other. And we had talked about, like, each of us separately had dated other people and had started to dip our toe into non-monogamy. So when we partnered up, like right off the bat, that was one of those partnership defining conversations, is this is the path that we're going to go. But then actually getting plugged into a community, it took like a year or so. And it was somebody called us out randomly. We didn't know anybody else that did anything unique. And we were not really open with our friends because we didn't know who we could be open with or how people would react. And I think it was about a year in, we were having dinner with a new friend, and she was telling us stories about like this yoga retreat or something like that, you know, kind of an eccentric personality. And she just looked at us and said, "But y'all date other people, right?" And we had never had that conversation with anybody. And we were just dumbfounded staring at each other like, "Yes, but how did you know? We haven't talked about that." And she's like, "Oh, I'm going to get you in touch with this, you know, this guy that does yoga classes with me. He and his partner, they're non-monogamous. You should have dinner." And we were like so nervous going into that dinner. But being connected to people then, it was just such a relief too, of like, "Oh my gosh, there's other people that do this."
Yeah.
So you were sort of just swimming in it on your own, like out on maybe apps or going out, just trying to meet people in I want to say the real world, in like the monogamous, just the general dating pool. There was no like real language around it, it sounds like.
Fully making it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, so relatable. Yeah. Yeah.
And so
how did it go?
Yeah. Yeah. From that point.
I mean, it was okay. I mean, there were, you know, definitely some mishaps at the beginning. I think that we were just very risk adverse because we didn't know what kinds of conversations to have. We didn't know where to go. Look, we were looking on like Craigslist because there were all of these dating apps, and I had zero experience at that point with any sort of online dating. And my partner had only ever used it to try to meet people in a monogamous capacity. So, you know, there were just random people, like really random. Some really good things happened out of that. We met some great people, but it wasn't even like friend of a friend or somebody who checked the box non-monogamous on a dating app or anything. It was just like people who responded to a Craigslist ad.
Yeah. And were you doing sort of the relationship anarchy sort of, again, not necessarily having the words, but was that sort of how you were approaching it? Or was this sort of like, we're a couple doing this as a couple, or we're sort of the primary unit and things revolve sort of around us? I'm just curious what that struck, because again, like blazing your own path, you get to do whatever you want. And there's like none of these words exist at that time. And so I think it's just really interesting.
There was a decent amount of trying to meet people as a couple, because we were both too nervous to try to meet people individually. And we definitely came across those situations in which we found out that there were people who were trying to cheat on their significant others and just things like that that were happening. So so doing things as a couple felt very comfortable at the beginning, but it also just wasn't really a good fit, you know, like finding another person or another couple that we were both excited about. That's a really tricky thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And I want to pause for just a moment and talk. Like, I want to get back into the story and how that went for you. But talking, it occurred to me that not everyone might be super familiar with relationship anarchy. And I was wondering if you could take a moment to kind of like describe what it means to you.
Yeah. So to me, relationship anarchy is kind of the concept that one relationship in your life doesn't automatically have more of a priority because of, I guess, like what boxes it checks. So for anybody who's not familiar, the Relationship Anarchy Smorgasbord is fantastic. And there's all of these different things that you can get fulfillment out of a relationship with. It could be social, going to parties together, going to meet friends, or going to the movies together. It could be a financial sort of partnership, business, you know, something that is romantic, which is different than something that is sexual. It could be something involving kink, friendship, traveling, running a business together. So all of these different things that people typically get out of, you know, a partnership or, you know, friendships with others, looking at your relationships and saying not one person has to do all of those things for you. You can figure out together what are the things that makes sense between the two of you? What are the different boxes that we want to check and we want to focus on those things and leaning into? And then, you know, essentially, like when I'm looking at my relationships, you know, I have a nesting partner, and just based on how entangled we are together and, you know, the history, like there's a lot of times that that's going to take priority. I might spend more time with him than I do with other people throughout the month. But that doesn't mean that other people can't be equally as important or grow to a place where they're also very important. So that's kind of how I see relationship anarchy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think what's really interesting, there was a word you said right at the beginning of that around that people are not automatically, mm-hmm. you know, more important or more prior. And I think there's also a lot that gets wrapped up in the equating importance and priority with time spent. And I think that those are just like, I think so much of our lives, we equate those two. And so if somebody says, well, I'm the most important, therefore I get the most time or something, or the most priority. And I just, it's a really interesting one to untangle. And I'm just like thinking of an example that like comes to mind is maybe you have a relationship that is all you do is get together and go to the movies and watch like really great documentaries and then unpack them together. That's your whole relationship. And maybe there's like, you have a nesting partner. Hell, maybe you're even married with kids and a business together. But Friday rolls around and a new documentary is dropping. That might take priority over everything else in your life, because that relationship, although it doesn't take the most time, it's, you know, 3 hours a month, it is the most prioritized in that moment. And so I just, there's really interesting ways I think that all of these can show up when we're really focusing on how are we all getting our needs met for ourselves, but also looking to our partners and saying like, it's not truly anarchy and chaos. It's a lot of coordination. And how do we make sure that everybody in the system also feels good?
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, when obviously calendar planning, it's a huge thing in the non-monogamy community. And I end up traveling a decent amount for work and for fun. So every month or leading up to the beginning of the month, I send an email to my partner and I propose a lot of different dates to put on the calendar, usually like twice a week, give him the opportunity first to kind of look through and say like, okay, these things work. Yes, let's get tickets for this thing that you described. And we'll get all of those on the calendar. And then I go to my friend, I send her a message and I say, hey, here's, you know, 6 different dates throughout the month. Like, can we get these things on the calendar? And I just kind of go down the list of like 3 or 4 different people. I have my workout buddy that there are some weeks that I see him more than I see my partner because, you know, we're working on something in particular at our fitness classes and stuff. And so the calendar planning, you know, everybody talks about that with like their different partners, and it can also be with your friends, with your workout buddies. And I incorporate all of those into that same process. It's just, okay, everybody, let's get the calendar figured out for this month.
Yep. Yeah.
I love it.
I think it's just really, I think it's a powerful model because you can spread it out, right? You're not always looking to one friend for everything. And that doesn't mean that you don't have some friends that maybe 90% comes from. Like, that's not wrong either. But it's not, hey, we just labeled ourselves best friends. Why are you seeing another friend, right? Yeah. We just labeled ourselves nesting partners. Why are you prioritizing somebody else above me when I have a label that looks like this? And so it can be a bit of a mind fuck sometimes to like look at these things and they have labels and but then they have like the practical behind the label and they don't always match. So I'm enjoying hearing how you do this dance, because it is a dance in my opinion.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I'm going to dive back a little bit into your story of like, it sounds like you and your partner kind of were stumbling through this, trying to meet people, trying to figure it out. Then you got introduced to someone and you got to go to dinner and you got plugged into a little more of a community. And it sounds like when you started that, it was a little more of trying to keep up with people of like, okay, well, we must do it this way and we must do it that way. And I was curious if you could expand on that experience a little bit more as you entered that community and sounds like embraced it.
Yeah. So I think that we were fortunate that this couple that we had first gotten connected with had gone through their own roller coaster. They're about 10 years older than us, and they had done, they had been a triad for a little while. They had been swingers. They had been polyamorous, you know, and they had kind of gone through those different phases themselves of exploring all of the different types of non-monogamy. And so they were able to share those experiences, which was really wonderful because, you know, it's basically enabling you to say anything's okay. As long as there's good communication, as long as everybody's on the same page around boundaries, agreements, all of those things, then anything can be on the table. And first off, that reassurance was just really fantastic. There's not a wrong way to do non-monogamy unless you are not involving communication and consent. But then getting plugged into the community, this was in the Dallas area. And first of all, very different cultures than Seattle, very different ways that people practice non-monogamy. And so, you know, there was like a really big swinging community. A lot of people that did non-monogamy there. From what I saw, it was a lot of people that had, you know, a primary partnership, usually people that were married with kids that decided to open up their relationship later. So you had a lot of hierarchical setups, which was okay. I was on board with being, you know, secondary partners with people. I had a lot of time commitments with work and everything. And so, you know, it was interesting just the differences that I've seen regionally in trying to find your fit. And it was really influenced by what was around of like what you're seeing. So, I mean, the concept of this podcast is fantastic because then people all across the world can hear like there's all different ways to do that. But it definitely skewed things a little bit of like what your expectations were and what you thought you could get out of a relationship and where the ceiling was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Having moved from Michigan to the Bay Area, there's a bit of a difference. I don't know if you noticed that, Emma. Pretty much not.
We've lived in a lot of different places, I feel like, and everyone is very different.
Yeah.
So I'm curious. So you were in the Dallas area for a while and kind of exploring what's there. And then you, at some point you moved. And I'm curious how that all folds in of, you know, what did it look like in Dallas? And then maybe how did it shift when you moved?
So I took a pretty long break from dating because I was very focused on work for a while. Absolutely didn't stop my partner. He was still dating, and it was good to kind of live through his journey too, because as he was meeting people, he was learning more and sharing all of that knowledge with me and, you know, embracing the different books and podcasts and everything that there was to offer. And so there was a lot of learning involved on my end. There wasn't a ton of dating until, honestly, right up until the pandemic was about to start. And I was like, let me get back out there. It's been a little while. And then, you know, that lasted for about 2 months before everything went into lockdown. So unsuccessful. So there was a lot of learning and kind of seeing things through other people's eyes. I did also get a lot more comfortable with being open with my friends and, you know, some of my family, my siblings, my cousins about our journey in non-monogamy, which was pretty cool because as soon as you turn to somebody and tell them like, hey, I'm doing something a little bit different, all of the stories came out of the woodwork and I didn't realize that I had so many friends that were like so kinky. So everybody became really comfortable talking about those things with me, which is also cool. So, you know, in just dating in Dallas, you know, when I did have those experiences, I'd say that people were, the communication and stuff like that was still there, but there was a lot less kind of community and educational resources around it because I don't know if it was still kind of a, you know, let's go meet at somebody's house. We're not super out about this. We're not, you know, going to be walking around in public holding hands for our two different partners that we have or going on, you know, dates with multiple people because we don't want other people to know. This is kind of like not an okay thing sometimes. And in moving up to Seattle, it has just been a really crazy experience, really fantastic that it seems like people are a lot more out here there's a lot more styles of non-monogamy, a lot of people that practice solo polyamory. There's not as many hierarchical relationships, although that's, you know, still very much a thing. Way more kitchen table poly, garden party poly, like so many terms that I didn't even know existed that we've discovered up here.
Oh, I just learned a new one. What is garden party poly? GPP? I don't know.
Yeah.
I've not heard of this one.
So I was actually at a lecture last night where they were kind of going through the different ones and talking about online dating. So you have kitchen table poly, which is, hey, we're all comfortable, like, you know, sitting together at the kitchen table, getting to know each other. And then you have garden party poly, which is more of, if my partner is having a birthday party or a get together at the house and me and the other partners are there, we're comfortable crossing paths, but we're maybe not to the point where we want to sit down and have meals together. And then there's the parallel poly, which is you go do your thing, I'm going to do my thing, we're all cool with it, but we don't necessarily need to meet each other's partners.
Awesome.
Yeah. I mean, they make logical sense. I just hadn't heard the term before.
No, I know.
So I think that's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so how, it sounds like the move to then Seattle was huge for you and really opened things up for both of you and in the non-monogamy space as well. How long have you been there now?
So it's been about 2 years now. I think also the pandemic of just being at home and kind of rediscovering. Yeah, that thing that happened.
Yeah, that thing.
You know, there's always like, I feel like everybody I've talked to has, you know, found some new version of themselves throughout that. I learned that I love painting way more than I thought. But there was a lot more reading and kind of thinking about like what relationships were important to me when everything got pulled away. And that was also when I started to kind of re-embrace my friendships, and relationship anarchy started to enter my dictionary, and I started embracing that. So then moving up to Seattle, when we got up here, I was just like, I had discovered relationship anarchy. I had spent, you know, the year that things had opened up before moving here of just re-embracing all of my friendships and realizing exactly how important those things were to me. And so now it's just been, I think building community has been the biggest thing because everybody is so out and because everybody's so excited about talking about their own stories. And it's not a shy thing that's happening behind closed doors. So that's really allowed a lot more growth just because of the number of conversations that I've been able to have with other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And how, I guess throughout this time, I mean, it's probably at that point, sounds like that was 6-7 years into your journey with your partner. Sounds like you've had roughly the same, your nesting partner today was on this journey with you the whole time. And I'm curious how the, just sort of the ebb and flow for the two of you has gone and how it has, how you've seen the two of you's relationship changing or growing or even struggling throughout this time of really finding your footing across a wide swath of different types of non-monogamy.
I think that the relationship anarchy smorgasbord, even if we didn't know what that was called, was always very much part of our relationship. In addition to being nesting partners, we've also run several businesses together and done, you know, new nonprofits and things like that. So there's also been this like very strong business dynamic in our relationship. One of the things that, again, like when you decide that you're going to be non-monogamous and you start breaking things down, I think you still have this conception of like what a romantic relationship is supposed to look like, what a lifetime partnership is supposed to look like when you're living with somebody, how you're supposed to interact on an ongoing basis. And it has just changed a lot over the years. And sometimes that came from a place of tension. Sometimes it came from a place of just sitting down and having meetings and saying, like, what do we each want out of this? Like, what's important to us right now? You know, and it can change based on, you know, what's going on with you of traveling for work or, you know, with me of starting to date new people. And so those things have just started to naturally change. And I think that what we became more comfortable with over time was saying it out loud and identifying it and recognizing like, hey, it's okay. It's okay that our relationship has kind of evolved to be a new thing, a different thing. And, you know, now even talking about the relationship anarchy smorgasbord, where we might look at it and say like, well, in this phase of our lives, what are we doing spending most of our time together? Is it a business thing? Well, that's going to be the most important. Are we, you know, when we moved to a new place and it was, well, right now, the most important thing is socializing and making new friends. And so that kind of like jumps up the chart on the level of priority that it has in our own relationship. And so I think that's been like the biggest thing is just being able to talk about it. You know, sometimes when there are things that change in people's romantic relationships, you know, dry spells where you're not having sex or times where, you know, you're not going on vacations together because you have a new partner that you're excited to go on those vacations with. I think people get uncomfortable identifying it because they feel like something's wrong. And we definitely fell into those traps sometimes of just, you know, quietly sitting there thinking like, I feel like something's wrong, but I don't really want to talk about it. And you have those relationship check-ins. And when you do talk about it, it's like, well, how do we fix it? I think just one of the most beautiful things is recognizing that sometimes it's not actually a problem that needs to be fixed. It's just a transition. And now we're doing something different and that's okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like you've moved to a place where, and again, I think I will say, speak for ourselves, that we never fully arrive in any of these places where we're just like these fully enlightened relationship anarchists or whatever. We just know now. But it sounds like you've moved to a place where you hold things a little more loosely to say, well, whatever thing isn't working, maybe it's the sleeping situation. We're like, well, we're really struggling to sleep together. Maybe separate rooms would be a good thing to try. And that doesn't have to mean that our partnership just got demoted. It just shifted a little and we're actually happier. Actually, we're closer now that we aren't sleeping in the same bed or the same room.
100%.
Which I give you again, a lot of credit. Like those are hard to do. We've been facing some of those types of things in our own partnership as we've uncovered many years of being so interlaced that we didn't even know, right? And so now we're like figuring out how can we let go of something? And sometimes when we let go of something, the fear we have is it's going to tear us apart, but we actually find ourselves in a better place.
Yeah. And it's so fantastic when that happens. And when you can talk about it, that's the thing. It's like the ability to sit down and say like, hey, this is the thing that's changed in our partnership. How do you feel about it? And being open and honest instead of worrying about hurting the other person's feelings, like your example of sleeping in different rooms, it could be like, oh gosh, like we like different mattresses or you get really hot at night and I get really cold and need more blankets. And, you know, it's just like the incompatibilities when every other part of your relationship can be so fantastic that you think this has to be good. You know, we have to be the picture of the perfect couple all the time. And, you know, if we talk to our friends, we can't tell them that like we're having trouble sleeping in the same bed together because it's going to make us look like we're less of a strong partnership. And it could be a simple conversation of saying like, hey, I get really, really hot at night and you're just like adding to it and burning me up. Like, what's your experience in approaching those things with curiosity? Because you might be surprised when the other person says like, oh yeah, you keep scratching me with your toenails. Like it's miserable. And you just decide like, well, let's try sleeping in separate beds. And how does that impact our partnership? And so it is really nice when you can start doing those things and start exploring changes without seeing it as a bad thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are you open to sharing maybe one or two of these shifts that you and your partner have gone through over your time together?
Vacations. That is definitely a thing. We still enjoy going on certain trips together. And, you know, he used to be my vacation buddy. We lived together. It was, you know, a convenient thing. It was one of those things that you think partners do. You travel together and go explore new places. But we have very different travel styles. Sometimes I like to go sit on a beach in the sunshine and he blends in very well in Seattle. He loves the cloud cover and not so much the harsh sun that Dallas had. And I still need that. So when I decide that I need sunshine, I grab one of my friends and go on a trip to Mexico. Or when I want to, you know, go on a trip to Europe, like he's not always my first choice of person to go. And I think the first couple of times that we started doing that, you know, I would decide like, I'm going to go on a vacation and invite somebody else. It felt really awkward because I thought, because I wasn't asking the curious questions, that he was going to feel offended that I wasn't inviting him. There was a lot of dancing around the subject of, hey, I was really thinking of going on this vacation. And like, if you want to go, you're my first choice. And he's just like, no, that sounds terrible. I don't want to go do that. So it now, you know, like, we'll probably go do some vacations together. He met me out in Chicago last year and we had a great time. But my default now is I have other friends that I go on vacations with.
And how has it impacted, right? This is where, right, the fear is that it's going to tear us apart. What has been the reality for you two as you've started to do that?
A lot less, I think, pressure around how we're spending our time together, you know, because that's just one of the things, you know, when you take vacations off the table, and then it can also be conversations around, well, I really like going dancing and you don't. And he's really supportive of like, hey, how wonderful is it that you have friends that you can go dancing with and I don't have to deal with it? Vice versa. You know, he is a night owl and I fall asleep at 8 o'clock. And so we started shifting our dates to say they're going to end a little bit earlier and he's going to go do like a second evening, like go hang out with people after I've gone to bed. And that's okay. And so I think that, you know, it was probably like the first kind of adjustment that we started making. And it just kind of opened it up to a lot of other things. And so now, it, you know, it's that square peg round hole thing again. Like, we don't feel like we need to force each other to do the things that we don't want to do.
Yeah.
And we don't feel obligated to say yes to things that make us uncomfortable. We're very quick now to say like, hey, do you want me to go do this thing with you because it's supportive of you? Or do you want me to go do this thing with you because you think I will enjoy it? Because that's not the case.
Like, I'll go and be supportive of you if that's like what we agree to, yeah. but that's not the default.
Right. Yeah.
Which I think is super valid to throw in. And it's an important thing to not miss is, hey, I would still love for you to come and do this thing, even though I know it's not your jam. I would love for you to come and sit on a beach with me in Mexico, even though I know you would prefer to be sitting in the rain for whatever reason. That doesn't make sense to me, but okay. So I can understand that, but to be able to voice that, right? And they still have the opportunity to say, hey, you know, I can come for 3 days, but I can't be there for 7, mm-hmm. right? And then you get to have a conversation about what does that actually look like?
Yeah, absolutely.
I also found it really fascinating. Just, I think part of what's been fun to talking to you about, Jessica, is how, and I don't mean this negatively, but sort of how backwards you've done most things, right? You started the whole basically concept of relationship anarchy very early and then sort of found your way into something else and then came back to it. But I think it was interesting to hear that you're like, well, we started with vacations.
Which is a big
thing. Which seemingly, right? Yeah, for most people is a big thing.
A big thing.
And, like, and we worked our way backwards to like going dancing or maybe eating at different types of restaurants. And because we've heard the other side, which is like, I'm a vegetarian and my partner loves to eat steak dinners. And so once in a while, they go out and have a steak dinner with their other partner because I don't have to sit there and look disgusted at their food and they don't have to feel bad about killing a cow in front of me and blah, blah, blah. And so like we've heard that then like roll into bigger things like trips, but it's fun that you've started at trips and you're like, hey, this also works for like dinners and dancing and game nights. And so I think that's really amazing to see the variety of.
Yeah, go big or go home.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, if we can do vacations, we can do anything, right?
Yeah. I'm curious if you could, if you'd be open to touching on a few things that might be, have been more difficult between the two of you as you've had to navigate those.
I think that probably there are definitely hurt feelings sometimes of, I feel like this person doesn't want to do these things with me. He has what I describe as the golden retriever energy, just super extroverted, you know, could sit and have conversations for 6 hours if you don't cut him off. I like my batteries run out. I am a very social person. You know, I talk with people a lot during the day at work. And then by the end of the day, I'm just kind of talked out sometimes. And that right there can cause hurt feelings of, you know, looking at somebody at the end of the day and saying like, I don't want to interact with you, or I don't have the energy to interact with you. And so that can definitely, you know, translate across things like going out to eat or going and doing vacations, or how many dates are we having each week? And so that's a thing that we've kind of had to adjust how we communicate about those things. Like that was the thing that I think I struggled with, was making sure that he understood like the desire is still there. The desire to spend time with you and talk with you and be supportive of you, but the energy level is not. Like the brain capacity has completely disappeared. And there used to be a lot more hurt feelings about that when, you know, I would get home from work and just kind of be like, I can't right now, and go into the bedroom and close the door because like, I can't deal with anybody. I need to shut my brain off for a little bit and not have interactions. And so there was a lot of work that we had to do around that sort of communication. And also, especially during the pandemic, when we were living together and the pandemic happened, we don't have the opportunity to go out and socialize with other people. It's just each other. And that's when we really had to adjust the default, because the default was we're both home. We have nothing else to do this evening. Let's do dinner together. Let's spend time. Let's go for a walk. And I was running out of energy. Like I couldn't do that on a daily basis. And there were hurt feelings out of that too, on both sides of like, I felt like, you know, my time was just being kind of demanded. And I felt like, you know, I don't have the energy for this. We're going through all of these things in the world right now. Can't I just have some space? And he was on the other end of the spectrum, like, you're here. I want to be around you. Let's take advantage of this, all of this amazing time that we have together. And so we had to really change what the default was between the two of us at that time too.
Yeah, which is also really hard to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and I think it also ushers in some grief, right?
Yeah.
Even if you want or need this change, it is a change and something is lost. And I think, you know, we had a similar, in the pandemic, we started doing morning walks because we went on a lot of long walks together. Luckily, we were hunkered down in a place where there was sunshine and the possibility to go outside. But we would start going out, we would turn opposite directions and go on a walk. And then we would actually have something to like talk about later that day, you know, like, what did you see on your walk? I mean, it was very basic, but we were just starting to do little things. But there was also some sadness in that. Like, I will, you know, my best friend, I'm not getting to go on a walk. Like, even though I maybe chose this, it's a weird juxtaposition of the needs being balanced with sort of the practical reality of what's happening.
I still find myself running into that sometimes when we're having our kind of like end of the day regrouping. That I think this weekend, like we had a Sunday together that we were spending the whole day together, and lots of conversations, lots of projects that we were working on together. And then we had plans together Monday evening, in which he's just like, well, what's going on with you? And I was like, oh, well, here's what happened at work today. And he's like, well, what else? And my response is kind of just like an eye roll of like, you saw me yesterday. You got all of the updates yesterday. I told you, but like, I have nothing else. There's been zero other things that have happened to me. It's not like I was sitting at my desk and I saw a deer out the window that I wanted to tell you. It's like, you know everything at this point. And what sometimes I miss is like, those are bids to connect. Of like, hey, I want to know more. I want to keep connecting. And I should be flattered by that. And I should be excited about it. But sometimes I'm just like, I'm tired. I told you everything. So there was a lot of that during the pandemic too. It's like, you've been in the same house as me. Nothing interesting has happened that you haven't also seen. Where what, you know, they're really looking for is, well, let's talk about the thing that we both saw just over again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something to connect with.
Can we talk? I just want to talk. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I love that you mentioned those bits of connection, because it's easy for one person to make that out of a desire for connecting, and the other person to be in whatever state they are and just be, you know, not turn towards that, but turn away from it. And when you can turn towards that, even if it's to acknowledge that hey, I see you're trying to connect right now. I would love to do that too. And this is going on for me right now, or something like that. There's other ways that can be so much more beneficial in a relationship rather than turning away. But sometimes the turning away is like, that's what I can do right now. And so it's really hard to balance that sometimes.
Yes. Now it's just kind of gotten into the practice where I think he might regret it sometimes when he's like, well, what else is going on? I'm like, well, let me spend the next 20 minutes telling you about a video I saw of a raccoon and all of the feelings that it gave me. And he's just like, oh my gosh, I regret this. Never mind. Let's go back to silence.
Yeah. I liked it better when we weren't talking. Amazing. I have one other question that I wanted to ask, but before I do, I wanted to give you a chance to talk a bit about, you've mentioned community, you've mentioned some community organizing, and we have behind the scenes knowledge that you're doing some incredible community building up in Seattle. And so we wanted to get that information out there as fellow community files. We love our community. So tell us a little bit about all the work you're doing, Jessica.
Yeah, thank you. And I like that word, community files. So I am one of the board members for Evergreen Hearts. It's a new organization that we started not even a year ago, and it's already been such a success. So it's a nonprofit organization that is entirely volunteer run, that's based up here in the Puget Sound region. And what we are trying to do is connect all of those disjointed groups that existed. If anybody is listening from Seattle, there's a term that we hear often about the Seattle freeze, about people forming their little pods of friends, even outside of the polyamory community, and not really expanding outside of that. And so when there are people who are seeking community, especially when you are doing something like polyamory, where it's so important to connect with others and to hear those experiences and to know that you're not doing this on your own, it can be difficult to just kind of like plug yourself in. So Evergreen Hearts has done a couple different things. We launched at Pride last year, and I think there were like 5,000 polyamorous people that went through our booth. So surprise, there's a huge community up here. And first, we connected with all of the different organizers. I myself am the organizer of the Puget Sound Polyamory Meetup Group. But there are so many meetup groups and Facebook groups and FetLife groups and Discord chats and things like that. And we first connected all of those different organizers together with like an email list, a newsletter that goes out that just advertises to all of the subscribers about the different events that are happening. So if it's a random Thursday afternoon and you want to go connect with polyamorous people in the region, you can look at the calendar on the website or the newsletter and see that there's a dinner going on in Tacoma, or there is a board game night happening in Capitol Hill. And then beyond that, we are also trying to provide opportunities to welcome newcomers into the community, to help them grow in their knowledge and experience, and to better connect with each other through a series of different events. We just had one of our lectures last night, really fantastic lecture about, one speaker talked about restorative justice and another University of Washington professor talked about online dating as a polyamorous person. We had a really awesome event a couple of weeks ago, our first polyamory prom, where we had over 500 people and a live band, and everybody got to show up in their fancy prom dresses and everything. And we have so many more events that we are planning. For this year, we're going to have an even bigger presence at Pride because of the success of some of these events. And we are really just trying to do what we can to connect everybody and welcome them into the community.
It's amazing. I love how successful it's been too, and how it just shows how needed something like this is.
Absolutely. Yes. And there have been so many people that now are going to a lot of events. Like, you see the same faces over and over, and they're starting to make a lot more friends. So it's been really great to see.
Yeah, I think it's also a testament to the work that you're doing. And I know your partner's running a lot of this as well. And just the work, when the community comes together to build, community-built community is some of the most amazing stuff. So I'm super stoked for this, for what you're building. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. My question.
Yes.
Okay. So first of all, the relationship smorgasbord, like, links will be in the show notes for anybody who's like, what the hell is this thing that you keep talking about?
And so, links will be shown in the show notes to your work
as well. Just yes.
Pointing that out.
But I'm curious, when you are forming a new, I'm just going to use the generic term connection. You've met somebody. What do you do? How do you interact with them in such a way that you figure out where or how to sort of sort them into the smorgasbord, into your life in a connection that works for both of you? Like, what do those conversations look like? How do you approach sort of that, if that makes sense?
Yes. From my experience and from feedback from others, when I find a person that I'm really excited about, I come on so strong. Like, I have no game whatsoever. And so, like, especially recently moving up here and making new friends, there are people, especially like, you know, my two best friends up here, it was like two or three times that we had hung out and I'm just like looking at them and I was like, so do you want to go on vacation with me this weekend? Like, when are we going to buy that condo in Europe together so that we can go spend half of our time in Italy? And like, I just no chill whatsoever. And so they can tell really quickly that I'm serious and I'm invested. You know, I actually had an experience this past summer where one of my friends that we've now hit, we actually celebrated our 1 year anniversary back in November. And we went back to the coffee shop where we had our first friend hangout. So over this past summer, like not even a year, we're probably like 6-7 months in. And I made her pinky promise that we were going to be friends until we're 80, because I'm that serious about the friendship. And so there are very similar conversations, I think, to when people are deciding that they want to be partners with somebody, with my friends. When one of my friends tells me that they have a big life change coming, they're going to move across the country or something like that, there's still the conversations about like, well, when am I going to go with you to help you pick out your apartment? And let's make sure that it's a 2-bedroom apartment so that I can come stay with you and work from your place, because you're like, this was not a casual thing. This was not a thing that just, you know, lasted for a year or two. We both invested a lot in this and we want this to continue. And we have big plans for what we're going to do together in our future. And it takes really special friends to get on board with that.
Well, I think it's amazing. And I think it maps to all relationship styles, right? Because those two people you sorted in some ways into the friend category, but they could have been a different type of connection, right? And then you get to have those same types of conversations, it sounds like, of what are you interested in? What am I interested in? What do I have capacity for? What do you have capacity for? It sounds like those are sort of the basis of how you build out what is to come for the two of you or the more of you.
Yes. And we still talk about things in the relationship anarchy smorgasbord. You know, we talk about like potential of what could it look like in the future if we become financially entangled or decide to purchase property together or open a business together. What would it look like if we have the same hobby that we're exploring together and, you know, approaching that as kind of a pair, even if it's a pair of friends that, you know, maybe we have decided that we're going to go take this pottery class and buy the equipment and like, this is a thing that we're going to do together. So we still use the relationship anarchy smorgasbord to define those parameters of what that relationship looks like for us.
I love that.
Yeah. I love that too. Do you have more questions?
No, I think it's fun to hear about the, like, you're like, I just come on full on and like, yeah, I can relate to that a little bit. That intensity of like, yeah. Okay, hey, was a great coffee date. When are we going on vacation or something like that? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Thank you so much, Jessica, for everything today. We've really loved getting to know you more. And I wanted to just make sure, like, is there anything else that you wanted to get out there before we let you get on with the rest of your day to day?
I mean, it's what we've already talked about, but I just think it's so important for everybody to know that, you know, relationships, like, do what feels best for you. And even though it took me a long time to come back around and say, like, relationship anarchy is my style and what I'm the most comfortable with, it's always a journey. And, you know, it's really good to be able to just kind of sit back and say, like, what is it that I want out of life? And what is it that I want out of relationships? And it's okay if those things are not the norm for everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Has finding your community, it sounds like you've found a better fit in community up in Seattle, but has surrounding yourself in that community changed sort of your ease in being able to accept that what I want maybe is different than what other people want?
I think a little bit, but I think it's also showed me that what I want is actually what other people want.
Yeah.
And that it's a lot more common than you think. And I think you show that on this podcast every week. It's just, you know, we're not doing something that's weird and one of a kind. It's actually something that's really common. And my monogamous friends are also embracing relationship anarchy the more that they learn about it. And so, yeah, that's probably the biggest thing I found in the community up here is I'm not as unique as I thought.
Yep. Best answer you could have given. Thank you. I think it's so true. And it gives that permission to, it almost gives that permission to push back against like the mainstream even more, because I can fall back into the arms and into the support of the community that says like, yeah, you might be different than them, but look, you've got all of us and we're different, but we're not that different. And you're not that crazy. You're a little crazy, but not that.
Yes, we're
all a little crazy.
Yeah.
It's okay. All right. We're all human. Humans are a little crazy.
Exactly.
It's the way it should be. All right. Well, thank you again, Jessica. Have a wonderful day, a wonderful rest of your day, and we'll be in touch soon.
Thank you so much.
And we're back. Thank you so much, Jessica, for everything you shared today and for the amazing work you do with Evergreen Hearts. We're so excited to send people your way and hopefully one day check out your work in person as well.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. As Emma said, amazing conversation. Loved having you on and are super stoked about what you are all building up there in the Puget Sound area. We're going to have to drop by at some point. Hang out with the party.
Yes.
So it sounds like a hell of a big party.
It does.
Good luck at Pride Month this year. Hopefully it's just as successful as last year.
A quick reminder, links again for everything Jessica mentioned are in the podcast show notes.
Next week, we're going to do an interview.
Yes.
Let me check. Yep, it's an interview.
Surprise.
We are talking to local friend of ours, Brett. Brett is the founder of the nonprofit Open, the Organization for Polyamory and Ethical Non-Monogamy. It is an advocacy organization that does incredible work. Super excited about the conversation and super excited about the work that Brett and his team are doing.
So come back next week and listen.
We will see you all then. And until then, have a fantastic rest of your week and a fantastic weekend.
Bye, everyone. Thanks for listening.